What a time, what a warm and wondrous time. So sweet a shining moment in the sun. Oh, what a time, was there ever such a time? Then suddenly it's done, the moment passes. Where does the time go? Must we let it end? Where does the time go?
Time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for a public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Time to dig deeper into local news and alternative views with the new WHFR Journal. Hi, my name is Jay Koronik, and here with you today in the studio is also Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director. How you doing, Dennis? This is mic check time.
Mic check. How are you, Jay? I'm doing very well.
Yeah? Okay.
I'm dry.
Okay. Well, it's not raining outside. I was out at the Dearborn Farm Market this morning doing the report, and Anthony Lai... It's spelled L-A-I. He's an adjunct professor in the music department. He teaches the music technology classes, those synthesizer and the studio recording, mixing classes.
And real tall, long hair.
Yeah,
looks like Joey Ramone.
Yeah, he's played with his band for our 25th anniversary party back in January.
Oh, cool.
And his band is called the Anthony Lai Band. Yeah.
I like that.
And that's no lie. Oh, I'm sorry.
oh, boy.
I was going to ask him why did he call his band that, but, you know.
You don't want to get personal, right?
No.
None of my business. That's funny.
But he also talked about the fact that next week begins the summer semester here at Henry Ford Community College. And final enrollment, it was over today, but technically if you've been enrolled at Henry Ford Community College before, if you're so-called in the system, you can just go online and look at the summer semester offerings and select them online over the weekend. Classes do start on Monday, if it's a Monday course. I know our staff training classes start up again, but they're once a week, and there's one on Wednesday night and then one on Thursday afternoon, so they won't be starting for a couple of days. And people are still, even in the first week, sometimes making their last decisions and switching around. And so if you work online, if you've already been admitted to the college, you can show up first thing Monday morning for a class that starts on Monday. And so that's really important, folks. There's a lot of special classes. Anthony Lai, in fact, is real excited. I think it's the first time he's taught the history of rock and roll class.
Oh, no kidding.
In the music department.
Now, Lindsay took that. She
really popular class. Absolutely. Four, five, six sections day and night in the spring and summer, usually totally filled. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of seats, he said, left, and that starts on Monday, for example. So great, talented guy, really helping the music program and entertaining the people at the farm market today, too.
Well, he was the engineer when we did the voiceover work and some of the special effects for the One Act Music Festival, which is this weekend.
Yes, it is. Another the show. Last chance, folks, to, it's our cultural update here at the beginning of the show, to catch the One Act Festival, which is five plays. Count them, not one, but five, all within about 2 hours?
Yeah, about two and a half hours, including intermission, and four of the five are student-directed.
One performance is tonight at 8 o'clock of all five, tomorrow again at 8 o'clock, and Sunday 2 p.m., the last performance of the five plays in the Henry Ford Community College One-Act Play Festival. I'm going myself, and I certainly hope that you can catch that. Admission, very reasonable.
$6 for five plays.
Less than a movie,
okay?
Or certainly less than a 3D movie.
Right.
And yet, this is in 3D, isn't it?
I mean, it should be.
Right. Should be promoted. And what kind of sound? Surround sound. Because that's natural sound.
You're exactly
you
right.
You don't have to worry. How many speakers? You don't need speakers. You got your ears and the sound bounces around. It's live, folks. Imagine. When you think about it, it's really ironic because you pay money for all these technical advances like 3D and full color.
And CGI and
surround
everything.
Sound.
Sure.
And what is that but a live performance?
You're right.
I mean, a live performance is full color, surround sound, and 3D.
And you know, and you're on the apron, and which means you're actually on the stage.
Oh, you're not doing cooking.
No. Okay. But when you're watching this play, I mean, you can be a few feet from the action if you choose. So that's pretty interesting.
So the plays are really cooking.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
we're barely 5 minutes in.
Looking forward to this grand finale weekend. You do have a lot of competition tomorrow, at least whatever the hours are for the Dream Cruise.
That's
happening downriver, too.
Right.
My gosh. Let's burn off more gasoline and get more pollution in the air now. Oh, I understand the future, in the far future, the only time you'll be able to drive a car is, because you can't afford it, is on weekends or for a Dream Cruise once a year.
That's true.
Just like the old car festival at Greenfield Village, once or twice a year you take that car that's 100 years old out for a drive, but you really can't afford to maintain it more than just about that.
No, you're right.
So in a way, I'm not against Dream Cruises, but they're going to become all we're going to have in the future because we won't be able to afford to drive a car every day. Oh, I got a phone call. Okay. I have it on stun. Don't worry.
Oh, geez. Well, we have a lot to go over today. Not just on news, but on some, I know that we had some editorial and some other commentary that we want to do, for lack of a better word, analyze.
So, yeah, real quick, the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, just sort of, some of this is headline news, really, folks. Dearborn has gotten an offer to sell the Dearborn Towers, which is in Florida, that sort of condo for senior retirees, which was very reasonable for those people, but a lot of people have moved out, and they were having trouble maintaining it, so it looks like that the offer was actually just a few dollars, like $100,000, $10,000 more than what they were hoping for, so about $6 million, and their city council is deciding whether or not to accept that formally, but they were pretty much planning in terms of the budget for 2011 to 2012 that they've already approved that gets sold. So if it didn't get sold, or if it wouldn't be sold in the next year, a city would be $6 million in debt. So I'm sure that they will take this offer unless there's some technical problems with that issue. Morris Goodman writes an editorial opinion, and I was interested that on the Press and Guide you can see in the paper, but you can also see on the website, what their most popular stories are, the stories that are read the most. Mm-hmm. When a story is read or email to somebody else, they actually keep track of the numbers.
And sometimes those are two different things. The story that's most emailed may not necessarily be the most popular. I've noticed that.
Although if you think highly enough to want to share it with someone, that may mean more than just reading it.
But sometimes they don't coincide. I think that's interesting.
Well, anyway, Morris Goodman, his editorial opinion, it's a regular column, and he is known, a couple of years back anyway, they used to pair him with John Conley, who represented the Republican Party point of view, and Morris Goodman wrote the Democratic Party point of view.
Counterpoint.
Yeah. Rather extensive debate on national issues, and unfortunately, it's all party politics there. So here he's actually stating his the case for higher taxes that, as I have done a couple times in the last couple of weeks, I was saying at least if the city council asks for additional millage to be approved, say in November, and it may be an earmarked approval for just one purpose, or there might be several that they'll ask for, or just one in general that the city council then can send the money wherever they need it most, whatever it's going to be, I was in favor of that extra 3.5 mils as a homeowner. I know that my tax has been going down, my home value has been going down, but my tax has been going down too, and the city needs that money. So it's fine with me to give them the same dollars. I'm on a fixed income, mostly, retired from teaching. And, so I budgeted for that amount when I retired 3 years ago. It just keeps going down. So it's not like I have a lot of extra cash, but in my head, I thought that was going to be a fixed amount, and now I'm not paying as much tax.
And you like your city services.
But the city needs it, yeah. And they need it for the services, so I think it's fine to build it back up again. And remember, folks, too, the way I think they're going to put on the ballot, they're going to say it's going to have a sunset provision, which means that in 2 or 3 years, it'll just go away. If the city wants more, they will have to ask for more from the taxpayers.
That's a good way to do it.
They hope in 3 or 4 years that the property values will start going up again, and then the old tax rate will be fine.
Right.
You know, it'll compensate, and the money will be about the same too, but they won't need that additional or supplemental, if you will, millage. Well, Morris Goodman I thought was interesting, and I'm just summarizing this because his statement is lengthy and very well thought through. I commend him on this. I mean,
especially since he agrees with you, right?
Well, he agrees in general, but he's suggesting income tax. And I know Mayor O'Reilly said that he wouldn't consider income tax. Hmm. Well, he did say, I'll think about it, in February at a public meeting, but has not proposed it since then. It would obviously, real estate people are selling homes. People could go to Allen Park or Taylor or Dearborn Heights, and they don't have an income tax. So if you're going to buy a home here, if you're going to live here or work here in Dearborn, then an income tax is going to be a problem. Now, it won't be much of an income tax, but once a year you'll have to file another form around tax time,
right,
in addition to the state income tax. And so it's a little bit of a negative publicity for Dearborn to have an income tax. However, his case, briefly, is that with property taxes still going down, those people that have a secure fixed income, they're the ones that have the money that are able to pay it. And, of course, income tax is not the same. There's always a cutoff so that poor people don't have to pay that city income tax. So it's an interesting argument that some people make, and I don't think he did, and that is that the fairest way to have a taxing system is to have a little bit of every kind of tax. That sort of balances out. So you don't have it all one kind of tax or the other. Certainly to have it all as a property tax for the state of Michigan is a problem. That's why they also have an income tax. As property values go down, the state would really be in a mess if it didn't have income tax coming in. So go read that for yourself, folks. It's on pressandguide.com. That's their website. Or go buy a copy and subscribe to the paper. Help support your local weekly papers like the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times Herald. Another cultural event that was mentioned in the Sunday Press and Guide. Starting today, this afternoon, the Green Fest in Dearborn at Crowley Park is going to begin. And the good news is, tomorrow and Sunday is supposed to be great weather.
Yeah.
A little bit warmer and no rain. And so we hope that that's going to be a success out there. Dennis, you're going to check that out tomorrow?
I am.
Maybe?
Tomorrow for sure. I'm planning on being there pretty early in the morning, too. As you know, there's a lot going on.
A
lot of it...
fun runs, there's bike parades, yeah. there's food, there's vendors, there's nonprofit groups that have tables.
And I think that's going to be my focus, and I'd like to call in. You kind of saw through that, didn't you?
Okay.
No, but the point is, I mean, we weren't sure if they were going to have a lot of informative things. We knew they would, but we didn't know to what degree, so I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, this was it was called the Cares Fest when we saw it last, and it's now under it's called the Going Green Fest.
Right.
Because apparently the group that has the garden there in Crowley Park, they have their own garden they manage.
Set it up there? All the way to the left?
Well, that's the Cares Fest.
Yeah. Sorry.
But the Going Green group, at least that's what they called the fest in that Press and Guide article, the Going Green Festival.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter. But the Going Green group is one of the group's environmental groups, sustainability groups in Dearborn. And whether or not they give their name to the festival doesn't matter. But go check out their garden there. And don't raid the vegetables.
No. But, you know, and then they worked out a deal. If you want to camp there, you can also eat. And it's a small charge. But my thing is, I want to go and see what it's all about. Because if this is something that catches on, like we suspect it might, who knows? In future years, we might be broadcasting from there. There's a lot of opportunities here, I think, for
us.
Well,
as long as it's free food.
You read my mind again.
Organic, natural food.
Healthy
grown
food's
on
good too,
Dearborn
sure.
soil.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very local.
Dearborn Times Herald from, Wednesday. Budget cuts lead to teacher layoffs. You mentioned last week in the Press and Guide it said 50 teachers were getting layoff notices. It usually, by twist or turns, a few of those people come back in the fall because locally there's some changes and things are better than they expected from one source or another. I just wanted to mention that the Times Herald says it's only going to be 35 people laid off, and their update is just a week later. The final word might come from directly from the mouth of State Representative George Duraney from here in Dearborn. He'll be holding a press event. Now, you could go out there, too, if you've never seen a press conference. This will probably be pretty minimal, first of all. So there'll be plenty of places to stand or sit or whatever, and you could talk to him, I'm sure, if not after, then during. You know, it's been reported twice this week. First of all, I heard that the state of Michigan announced that they had a budget surplus much bigger than they thought. In fact, they didn't expect one. Of course, they're still, what is it? $1.8 billion in debt, but this year's income, I guess from income tax, I would assume not from property tax, is more than they expected. And the second figure I heard was $100 million this week. And since I don't follow local newscasts, that is, on television, I'm not as up to date on that status. I know I could go on to freep.com or detroitnews.com or something. But there is more money. The question is, how much of it will go to education? That seems the burning need in Michigan. And of course, even if there's $400 million and it goes to education, it will still mean there has to be cuts.
Right.
Because it's still not equal to the amount of money they've already taken out. So don't think that this is, it's a gift and education is just fine. No, we're still going to be laying off teachers, increasing class size, decreasing curriculum options. So that's not good. So Duraney is going to have this press conference Monday morning, bright and oily, as they say, 8 a.m. at Long Elementary School. That's 3100 Westwood in Dearborn. And I don't know where Long is. Do you know? East, West, Dennis?
West Dearborn.
West Dearborn somewhere. Yes. Long Elementary. Okay. So that's 8 a.m. State Representative George Duraney. He's going to discuss the effects of the cuts to public education in the budget just signed by Governor Snyder. Of course, he signed that budget 3 or 4 weeks back. So I would assume he might be updating us on if that extra money has a chance to alleviate the problem.
Sure. Now, did you read the I know you did. I know the answer is yes. The Times Herald Wednesday, the 22nd version of the budget cuts, they specifically talk about how because of the agreement with the teachers union that cuts will not be made with teachers who get paid from the general fund. But they are cutting. The layoffs will affect teachers whose salaries come from other sources, including, I'm not going to go into the details, but these are at-risk funding and for teachers who teach children who are under or could be under the level of the standard, if you will, for their classmates. So in other words, the kids who need the money the most and the teachers the most.
The teachers and the school system that we need the most for these special problems that can't be dealt with in the standard classroom.
And your daughter would attest to that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
But so those are the ones who are at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it Am I the only one who thinks that that sounds ridiculous?
What's the reasoning for that? Was that a local school district ruling or the state budget ruling?
No, it's a local thing where they agreed with when they agreed with the teachers union, they said they will allow for no layoffs of teachers whose salaries are paid from the general fund. Now, if one of these at-risk teachers has more seniority, then they would go and they would take the place of the teacher that is getting paid from the general fund, but the position would still be held. This is confusing, but it doesn't.
Well, that's the last teacher contract that was signed then.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. I guess all I'm saying is that it seems that the teachers we need most, because they're so specialized, are the ones we may lose.
Yeah, you have to understand that the trend in business and also in higher education is to use part-time employees.
Sure.
Part-time employees get paid less. There's no guidelines. They're never in part of a union, or almost never.
No
they
benefits.
Are here at Henry Ford Community College. They don't have to pay any health insurance, any life insurance, any dental, eyeglass coverage, whatever. So it's a lot less expensive, sometimes only a third as much to employ a part-time person than let's say the equivalent number of part-time people to equal a full-time teacher. So because they save so much, but what is that? Is that a trend so that in the whole world there'll only be part-time employees with no benefits and no unions to support them? It's very scary, which is one of the reasons why the largest concentration of part-time teachers has always been, part-time employees, has always been in higher ed.
Yeah.
And it started at community colleges, I'm sorry to say, and now the concept is spread so that about 60 to 80% of teachers at four-year schools are part-time also,
okay.
So-called adjunct instructors, no disrespect. So here at the college, 2 years ago, they started Local 337, the part-time teacher union.
No kidding.
So that they have some bargaining power, some rights, and they do have a new contract in place, which gives them some security, and it gives them a forum to objectively talk about their situations and try to improve that. So I don't begrudge the teacher contract in trying to protect full-time jobs. I think all full-time jobs are better for society as a whole to have the contact, the continuity, the focus. Part-time people are pulled from one part-time job to another if they want to get enough money to survive. And how can they do a great job in any single position with one entity if they're only there and they're only thinking about it a third of their fourth of the time each week? It's not a good trend in any industry or business. I mean, do you want a brain surgeon that is not concerned about brain surgery, every day of the week?
No, that's a good. But no. At the same time, I think that the college, the higher ed at the college level, lends itself to part time a little more easily, simply because you may have a teacher who teaches a class for a couple hours a day, 4 days a week. In other words, they are truly part time if they choose to, because that's how classes are structured at the college level.
And sometimes, and this is the advantage in higher ed, or was years ago. Part-time people, because they have day jobs in the industry, the business that they have that extra life experience,
sure,
that really benefits, as long as hopefully they got the academic background,
right,
too, of course, they need both. But that really helps certain programs, like in the art department. And I mean, in the art department, we've got fine instructors, and they are actually adjuncts who are artists, painters full time,
right,
and that's why they know it so well, and they can, and in other occupations, you know, the students get very good career. There is that, which means job counseling, because
right,
these people are right out there.
This is real world experience, right. Absolutely.
So there are reasons for pulling in people like that, but let's be clear, they're coming from a full time job to make a little bit of extra money,
right,
and that's the benefit to the school. But if they don't have that full-time job to start with and that life experience, then they got some academic knowledge and they're really struggling to survive. My opinion is I understand the desire, not just to protect their own job selfishly in the K-12, because it's not selfish. They're trying to maintain the quality of instruction.
Right.
Well, anyway, so we'll see where that goes. And I think George Durrani, Monday morning, I don't get up that early usually, but he certainly will. Maybe we can get him in the studio here soon.
Okay.
To give us the update. They're trying to close down the legislature. Our full-time legislature is going to try to take the summer off for the first time in several years, because they have a budget now, and so they're going to be out of session, which means George will just be I don't know, walking around the farm market and, you know.
Well, good, ideal.
Talking to people. I mentioned just as a segue, he's got his picture in the Press and Guide in the back section of the Wednesday edition, showing him helping culinary arts students. He's testifying about how we need to get training for them in an advanced skills. And if you read closely, it's kind of interesting that, and it's important, but it's he's basically trying to get a full-time liquor license for community colleges, including Henry Ford, of course. And I will have to say that for the few benefits the WHFR has put on over the years, where we wanted to have at least beer or wine, it was a rigmarole of paperwork. I mean, I had to go and get an insurance bond from a small company in Dearborn. I had to go to the Dearborn Police Department and fill out an application about how responsible we are. You know, date, time, location, number of police that might be in attendance. And then another document had to be sent to the State of Michigan Liquor Control Commission to be approved. Altogether, it took 4 months. Couldn't have been done faster either.
Wow.
And the college or any nonprofit that wants to get that kind of permit, you're limited to, was it 3 or 5 a year? Well, you know, they do benefits here for fundraising and that, and they'd like to have a cash bar usually for that, and they got to get a separate permit. So it's an unnecessary hassle. Now, I thought an interesting twist or turn to get it approved is that culinary arts, that is people working in all, what's also referred to as hospitality, food service, dining, catering, food prep, and so on, specialties, can... This is considered advanced skills to learn how to mix drinks and serve them. I never thought of that, but I know there's special classes in bartending and that. And my God, there must be a whole bunch of mixed drinks, you know.
There are.
A double dry martini or a Caribbean punch or something.
Yeah, there's so many now. But I think your point is that they're soon going to be offering advanced degrees in this stuff. They call it mixology.
Well, they call it political spin, too. We're just trying to get a liquor license so we can sell booze. But, you know, so advanced skills for culinary arts students. I mean, it's
right.
Things they wouldn't normally be able to find out anything about because they can't touch the real alcohol on campus right now without a special permit for a special event. But I never thought of that as an advanced culinary arts
skill. That liquor license is not going to be the difference between the culinary arts students getting a job or not.
But George got his color picture.
Oh my gosh.
Looking.
So did you, though. Didn't you in a different...
Yeah, in the same issue. But, but you know, it's just amazing how we get our pictures in the paper, folks.
Right.
And what excuses they give to...
you were in the right place at the right time.
Making it credible. Yeah, well, Millard Barry, if he takes your picture, it's so good, it's bound to show up somewhere because he never takes a bad picture. Or he never shares a bad picture.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've never seen it, but that doesn't mean anything.
Okay. Moving on here, folks. Yeah, we have some comments from Jim Hightower, which we want to get to in a moment. Another interesting editorial, and what do you think? Read the editorial in the Dearborn Times-Herald. No, they didn't write it themselves. I've never, maybe one editorial I've seen them actually write themselves over the last 3 years. But in the Kalamazoo Gazette, which is a related paper, I'm sure you didn't have to pay anything to reprint this, they had the challenging point of view that in the state of Michigan budget, the cost to operate our prisons, and we have one of the largest per capita prison populations in the United States. So what are we doing wrong there, folks?
Yeah, really.
Although, free room and board, health care, hey.
Oh, did you hear about that?
Yeah.
That was incredible.
I know. Well, they said $2 billion is too much to pay for Michigan to spend on prisons, that we've got to find a way. And they say, you know, these prisons, don't give them free health care. Yeah, well, you're going to lock them up and let them stay sick and
right.
then die? What are you going to do? You got to give them health care if you put them in prison. I think you have that responsibility. I think, in a way, I'm sorry to say, you have a responsibility to train them and retrain them and educate and counsel them while they're there, not just staring at television sets and breaking up rocks. They still break up rocks in the yard or
license
breaking
plates.
Up each other's heads or something.
Sure.
Prison is supposed to be a restriction of freedoms, and you're not supposed to like it.
No.
You're not supposed to enjoy it. but it seems to me that even more money should be spent in order to retrain and redirect and counsel people, not just when they get out and have a probation order, but before they get out. Find a job for them before they get out. And maybe in a city, different than the one they were in before, so they wouldn't be connecting with the same bad influences.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the usual reason for people to fall back into the lifestyle pattern that might result in them coming back to jail again,
right,
is that they're in the same environmental situation. So, you know, what a little relocation money, you know, you say, well, that's going to raise the budget even more. But then guess what? After a few years, those people will not be coming back to prison. And, you know, we will have a smaller prison population.
Right.
And then the balance will be more appropriate. So, you know,
people have a hard time grasping.
That's the way I see it. But read that article, folks. It's very interesting. And again, the reason we're spending so much is we have so many prisoners. Why are so many people committing crimes in Michigan compared to other states? We just have very good police that are able to catch a lot of them.
Well, actually, it's probably we were hit so hard during the downturn in the economy, we were hit harder. Arguably, right?
Well, everybody thought that the crime rate would go up since 2008 because of tough times. There would be more theft, you know.
Sure.
Of money or property or cars. It hasn't happened in Michigan.
It stayed the same?
Nationwide, crime has gone down.
Wonderful.
Since the recession. So what's wrong with all the criminals out there?
Yeah.
I guess the honest people are staying honest despite the financial problems. They're just becoming homeless. They're not becoming rich criminals, I guess.
Right.
Well, good for them.
Yeah,
but,
I guess. Or
no,
bad
nobody,
for them.
Nobody can figure that out. It was an article in the New York Times a couple of months ago that I didn't share over the air here, but that nationally, including Michigan, the crime rates in most every category have decreased, especially since the economic crisis of a few years ago, since 2006. So, California is just releasing a whole ton of prisoners that are considered non-harmful.
I mean, this could be that attitude, we're all in this together. I mean, a lot of people of influence have been preaching that for the last couple of years, that we're doing, let's do this together, you know? So maybe
it's just that I know people that were put in prison in Michigan for a minor offense and spent a year or two, which is like a small sentence, but we're really good people. It was the first offense and everything. So I'm thinking, why are they in prison? Because they're not a threat to anybody. They have no criminal history and whatever. Coming out, though, because they're a felon, cannot get a job.
Right.
They cannot. Of course, who can get a job these days anyway? But, I mean, they don't even have a chance. They're just X'd off the list if there's a choice by any business at the outset. That's why I said if they release them from prison, they should release them with a job already there for them, something at least to get by, and we don't do that. You know, was it $50 in the pocket or something?
That's the old the stereotype. But I mean, at some point, I think that you can get an early probation if you have something completely lined up. So there are some things, but I think your point is that everybody should have the same advantages if they're getting out of prison.
Yeah. So I mean, it is a major cost in Michigan, and other states don't spend as much on prisons, but it's not. It's because we got more prisoners, folks, and we want a good police force and we want a good court system. But it seems like we're not turning these people around or helping them to get back to an honest life either. So something like 2/3 of the people in prison have already been there once,
wow,
if not twice before. I mean, that's the prison population. It's people that are, you might say, career criminals,
sure,
or habitual criminals, mm-hmm, whatever. I don't think anybody chooses it as a career if they had some good other choice. Well, okay. Here's a couple comments from Jim Hightower. First, Obama goes a courting. Oh, yeah. I thought he was married.
So did I.
Well, anyway, and the second one is talks about corporate corruption, and he's in favor of a little bit less corporate political corruption. So listen up. Very challenging thoughts, just like the editorials. Here we go.
Ah, love. A time of intimate talks, long phone calls, romantic dinners, and nonstop wooing. We can see these actions in the tender love story of Barack Obama. Not as a young man falling in love with Michelle, but as president, passionately pursuing his current heartthrob, Wall Street bankers. Obama is in hot pursuit of the elite financial royals he had once derided as fat cats. This spring, however, charmed by the heft of their bankrolls, he invited 24 of the multimillionaires over to his house. The White House, that is. Gathered in the Blue Room, they spent more than an hour with the president, who turned them on by cooing aphrodisiacal words that bankers can't resist, such as, tax cuts, deregulation, and I love you. After this snuggle session, Obama followed up with personal phone calls to Wall Streeters who had not been able to attend. Also, to demonstrate the depth of his affection for these money powers, the president is making a special trip to their private lair in New York City, taking a group of bankers, hedge fund operators, and private equity speculators to dinner at Daniel, the posh Upper West Side restaurant. Hey, nothing's too good for those you love. Excuse me, but it's embarrassing to see him kiss their sorry butts. These privileged princes of high finance crashed our economy, causing mass unemployment and hardships for millions of working-class families. Obama bailed them out, let them keep their pampered positions, and allowed them to return to their reckless casino culture. He's already done too much for them. This is Jim Hightower saying, Obama claims that he needs Wall Street's campaign cash to win re-election. But if he'd just stand up to these narcissists and stand up for America's workaday majority, he wouldn't need their money, because grassroots people would already be with him.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Come on, Obama, do it! Stand up, stand tall, stand firm. Yes, you can. The president is thinking about issuing an executive order that would mitigate some of the damage done to our democracy by the Supreme Court's dastardly Citizen United edict, which unleashes unlimited amounts of secret corporate cash to pervert America's elections. Obama's idea is simply to require that those corporations trying to get federal contracts disclose all of their campaign donations for the previous 2 years, including money they launder through such front groups as the National Chamber of Commerce. This approach says to those giants sucking up billions of our tax dollars for endless war, privatization of public services, etc., you're still free to shove trainloads of your shareholders' money into congressional and presidential races, but hey, just tell the public how much you're giving and to whom. Neat. It would be a clean, direct, and effective reform. So, of course, the corporate powers and their apologists are squealing like stuck pigs. Stephen Law, a Bush-Cheney operative who is now both a Wall Street Journal editorialist and the head of a secret corporate money fund, recently decried the very idea of public disclosure of contractor campaign contributions. When I was in the executive branch, he sniffed, mixing politics with procurement was called corruption. Yes, Steve, and y'all were corruption experts. Perhaps you've forgotten that we remember Halliburton, the Cheney-run corporation that helped put Bush in office and then was handed tens of billions in contracts, becoming the poster child of corrupt, no-bid procurement. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Obama, you can do it. Don't back down from these corporate sleazes. Sign that disclosure order. After all, if they're going to steal our elections, at least we should make them admit it to us.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Thank you, Mr. Jim Hightower. You know, Jim lives down in the Austin, Texas area, and I'm sorry to say it's in the almost approaching 100 degrees today. That's global warming, folks. In fact, another place that I love that I visited in the past in the middle of winter, Michigan winter, is Tucson, Arizona. For the last week and a half, would you believe their high has been 108 to 110?
Wow.
I know, it's a dry heat. No, come on, folks. You go out there, you're dehydrated in seconds. Imagine 110 degrees, and now it's gone on 10 days in a row.
No,
you know, and in fact, Texas has had the worst drought in its history. Arizona, of course, northern Arizona, partly because of the drought and the high temperatures, they have a lot of forest, but that huge fire burned the largest number of acres, I think, in the last 20 years. That was in, I think, north and northeast of Flagstaff, where there's a lot of forest and trees. Well, there were, anyway. So don't think that global warming is just a question of temperature. It's a question of radical changes in the weather. You know, the spring, we had those 90-degree days for a while,
sure.
But before and after it, freezing cold, rain consistently every day for 3-4 weeks. What was it, Seattle, Washington or something?
Right,
I mean,
right.
No, the rain capital of the U.S. This is very unusual. And, And of course, the glaciers and the ice caps are still melting and all that. And you got some really sad pictures to support. I get direct mail about all these social causes.
Sure.
Because I have contributed in the past. I have given $5 here or there. And some of the saddest pictures are the polar bears that are hanging on to an ice floe because it broke off and they're trapped and there's no they're food and they can't get back to the land and just going to die.
A cameraman can help them.
Big, fuzzy, white polar bears and, you know, a bottle of Coca-Cola in one hand, of course.
Oh, jeez.
No, not those pictures.
He's wearing
a
Santa hat.
Yeah, right.
You know, that makes this Dearborn Cares, this festival this weekend, mm-hmm. that much more mm-hmm. important. Yes, it's here, it's local, but that's where we can start. We can think about the polar bears in the North Pole, you know, as we're doing the things locally.
People planning ahead. The city of Chicago, okay, not far away from here, 300 miles west,
right.
On a bullet train would be 1 hour trip.
That's right, bullet train.
No, I just read today that for 2 years they've had one of the bullet trains in China. It goes 300 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's what,
can you imagine at the end
away.
When they put the brakes on what that's like?
Well, you're,
mama.
You're stopping, woo! Yeah. You're stopping at Lake Michigan.
Your face will be pressed against the wall in front. You know, wow. I'm sure they slow down over a period of time. But
yeah, where
imagine
they
getting to Chicago in 1 hour. Well, what they're doing, though, for beautifying their city is they're making sure to plant tropical plants because they believe the temperature in 20 years when these trees and plants are mature will be 10 degrees warmer. On average.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, this is what they're doing because they're planning ahead. They know the temperatures are going up, and so they're not going to plant trees that are going to die when it gets hotter. They're going to plant trees and other bushes that are thriving now in the tropics because that's going to be our temperatures here
like
in this area.
It sounds like they're resigning to the fact that it's just going to continue to get worse.
We're not moving back from the precipice. You know, we're not decreasing greenhouse gases.
Right.
We're not doing enough worldwide. It was even pointed out the stuff about, which the Republicans like to point out, is that the cap and trade provisions or the carbon credit concepts, which many places in the world, they have adopted the cap and trade and carbon credits. It's not helping. It's not helping because it just means that the polluters pay money to other people for their credits, but the pollution goes on.
Right.
It's just crazy. So I'm one of those liberal, progressive, independents, whatever, libertarians, that the cap and trade concepts, everybody knows they won't work, sort of like the Medicare program we have now, which has not gone far enough. And I'd like to segue to that. It's amazing how I do that, isn't it?
It's amazing is the word. Yeah.
I have three stories here, and I don't think Dennis has seen them because they're not directly in the paper. Well, one is, and I've been meaning to do this one for several months, and we'll come back to the redistricting issue,
yes.
Which is kind of important. Maybe Duraney can tell us what happened.
More of a
head
scratcher than anything.
And definitely later, as we finish, we're going to reveal the entertainment at Dearborn Homecoming. This is not in the paper yet, folks.
Oh no!
But we have the inside track. And you could too, but
and you're not going to believe what we tell you.
I'll do that one too,
right, cool.
But you've seen this. Okay.
Jeez.
Well, what it is the councilman, congressperson for the east side of Dearborn and Detroit. His name is John Conyers. He won't be councilperson for Dearborn at all because of redistricting,
right.
Starting in the fall. If the legislature and Snyder approves of that plan, which I hope they won't, not for Conyers' sake, but for the crazy quilt divisions that the Republican Party, that's them, the National Republican Party, they're in control and they do what they want, and they made it only in their favor. It has nothing to do with local issues or local Democratic representation, and I don't mean Democratic Party representation, but they chop it up so that they can get the majority of votes or majority of registered Republicans in every area. And but it won't. Anyway, John Conyers won't be our representative if that new plan is approved. He states, and this came out May 20th, so it's a while back, on commondreams.org. Highly recommend that website if you're interested in alternative points of view and mostly liberal or progressive points of view that don't get covered on mainstream media, even though they could be. He says the best way to save Medicare is to offer it to everyone. And this is what he says, and I'm just going to be brief here. Medicare is arguably one of the nation's most successful and cherished public insurance programs. The program covers approximately 47 million elderly and disabled Americans and helps pay for hospital physician visits and prescription drugs. It is truly hard to argue with success. Of course, as we know, the big problem is costs are still going up. No cost containment here of drug companies or hospital organizations. The traditional Medicare program, he says, coupled with a supplemental private insurance policy, covers most of our seniors' medical bills with far less copays and out-of-pocket costs than private insurance. Certainly true. Therefore, proposals to privatize Medicare, like Representative Paul Ryan, Republican in Congress, have met with such fierce opposition because it was revealed in the national media that privatization meant much higher out-of-pocket costs for seniors. National polls have shown strong general support for maintaining Medicare or even increasing funding for it. However, Medicare costs are projected to increase from $519 billion per year to $929 billion per year in 2020. So in 10 years from, well, last year, 2010 to 2020, it's going to almost double. And of course, it may be money well spent if it keeps the cost down. And if it's extended to everybody, then, of course, the total amount of money that will be paid is going to be less than the U.S. Altogether. And still, talk about free choice, yes. Death panels, no. That's all bogus myths. And so Conyers is totally in favor of universal single-payer health care, which could also be called, and of course, you can improve Medicare, make it a Medicare for All program, and obviously you improve it, you change it a little bit, and you make it, of course, continue it as nonprofit. And he's even reintroduced House Representatives Bill 676, the Expanded and Improved Medicare for All Act, that would, in fact, provide for a single-payer healthcare system, providing all Americans, including kids, with healthcare coverage. And he talks about the countries. He said in Europe, Japan, Taiwan, doesn't mention Canada here, have been able to effectively contain their healthcare costs for decades through their very successful universal healthcare systems without waiting lines, that is, waiting a long time for care, ration care, and out-of-control taxes. None of those things have happened in Europe, Japan, and Taiwan. So that's what he's in favor of. Just to let you know where one of your representatives stands now, although he won't be your rep probably in the fall. What I found, secondly, to forward this article is something that I know. I've known some doctors personally in the Dearborn area. This is an article from, it's a very progressive, liberal progressive magazine called In These Times. In These Times. And, of course, you can always go to their website, inthesetimes.org, since it's a nonprofit group. They have a health and science column, which is written by a woman, Terry J. Allen, and she says, cut waste and fraud, not Medicare. Up to 30% of U.S. healthcare expenditures are wasteful, Medicare's chief actuary estimates, and Medicare could trim up to $150 billion from its $500 billion 2010 tab without harming care. She says, here are some low-hanging billions in waste and fraud and poor practices. And I've seen these because I talk to the doctors myself, and I've got doctor friends in the area. One is punishing pharma fraud, pharmacies, the companies that make the medicines. The $4 billion worth of medical-related fraud the feds recaptured last year is presumably a fraction of the taxpayer-subsidized scams that pharma got away with. One, they did track down and finally arrest the doctor, I think from Dearborn Heights, from this area. It was in the both papers over the last 3-4 months that he had set up a healthcare scam to bilk dollars out of Medicare. So they need a few more enforcement officers to get into that. In fact, the top 10 federal False Claims Act settlements in 2010 involved healthcare, with pharmaceutical company fraud accounting for 8 of the 10. Number 2, kill pay to delay. When patents are expiring, when the formal newly announced drug has the patent expire after 10 or 20 years, whatever it is, then you can get either that drug still, or you can get a generic drug. In other words, exactly the same thing, usually at much less cost. Okay, so when that happens, drug companies pay off other firms to delay marketing cheaper generics. So some other company is ready to make the same drug, but sell it much less because they'll sell a lot more of it, and the other company will go broke. But the rich companies pay off the small companies to not release the generic drugs.
Profits probably so high they can do that,
Of course. Then they raise the cost even higher on their own drugs. Okay.
Sure.
So according to the Federal Trade Commission, these sort of deals raise costs for consumers, including Medicare and Medicaid, by $3.5 billion a year. So you just make it illegal.
Right.
Make it illegal and then enforce it. Next one, don't dope for dementia. Most of the antipsychotic prescriptions Medicare paid for in the first half of 2007 were, quote-unquote, erroneous. That's not appropriate. We're mistakes. That's according to the Health and Human Services Inspector General. During that period, Medicare was billed $116 million for off-label use of antipsychotics to dope nearly one person in seven in nursing homes, mostly for dementia. So keep them quiet. Keep them, they don't need it, but give it to them anyway. Keep them even more quiet.
Right.
Okay. So that's sort of inappropriate prescribing of drugs. Mandate infection controls. 1 in 10 hospital patients acquire infections that cause preventable deaths and create $6.7 billion to $11 billion a year in extra cost. My father-in-law, from my second wife, he died in a local area hospital, I won't mention the name,
right,
where he had formerly been the medical director. Very embarrassing. He went in there with a mild heart problem, and he died of a pneumonia infection because the pneumonia in that hospital, that lurking in the walls and the floors, even though they try to clean, but it mutates because of so many different antibiotics that are used there so much. He died of getting an infection in his own hospital, if you want to put it that way.
Wow.
Which is sad. So they got to do more about that. Bargain for drug prices. Congress barred Medicare and Medicaid from negotiating bulk discount rates. That was my big upset with the prescription drug thing that Bush got through, that even the AARP, the American Association for Retired Persons, approved of. The government cannot negotiate for lower drug prices. Well, give me a break. They do that in Canada. In fact, as the last one said, you better shop around. Drug companies charge Americans far more for brand name meds than much of the world pays.
Sure.
If U.S. consumers paid the same as Canadians, rather than 38% more, they would have saved $50 billion in 2003, according to Boston University. And in fact, I just saw, it was in one of the Dearborn papers, I thought, it's a full-page ad for buying your drugs from Canada.
Sure.
And I know there might be somebody's going to say, well, there's safety and regulation things, and you can't be sure they're safe. I'm not sure that some of the drugs I'm getting here in the U.S. are safe. There's not that much licensing and cross-checking here even. So I hate to say that, but I don't see the proof. Get this one, though, and this is one that I think I mentioned a week or so ago. Cut drug advertising. Only the United States and New Zealand in the whole world allows direct-to-consumer drug ads. All those TV commercials about one prescription drug or another that'll eliminate your bad breath or erectile dysfunction or whatever you have.
Anxiety.
Sure. I love that.
Yeah.
Only U.S. and New Zealand. And what's the point of that? To get their name out there so you force your doctor to get you the drug whether you need it or not.
Right.
But the doctor is the one that should, I mean, with all those side effects they mention in the, you know, mumbled, and this anti-anxiety drug may cause suicide and death. You know, excuse me, that's a side effect I don't want in my anti-anxiety drug depression, suicide, or death.
Not even a hint.
So, but there it is. So you need a doctor to assess your exact physical situation and whether or not you need these. Almost every prescription drug has major side effects that could kill you in some cases, but that's why you need a doctor to figure that out. And of course, nobody can say the doctors find out about these drugs from television. That's not right. That's not enough info. A doctor should read a medical journal.
But that scares me too. If a doctor's recommending something, you wonder why. Now, I trust my doctor, but there's a lot of unscrupulous doctors out there.
Well, this still goes on though. Before there was that advertising, there was even more of this. Office visits from pharma reps. In other words, drug company representatives, door-to-door salesmen. They go to the office, they have a sit-down appointment with the doctor, they give them free samples. And other incentives, like they bring lunch for the whole doctor's office, for the medical staff, not the patients. They give them Christmas presents of bottles of wine and champagnes. They give them trips, special educational trips, paid for by the drug company. They offer them consultancies to testify in trials for a small fee. And of course, if you're getting money, you know, there was a doctor in Dearborn that I had until I realized what was going on. He said, "Oh yeah, you got to take this drug. It's so good. I don't need it, but even I take it." Well, this guy is a heart specialist, and he's telling me he wants me to take this drug, supposedly for a heart problem. And he takes it even though he doesn't need to take it because he has no heart problem.
Good.
It's so good.
What does that mean, it's so good?
It was one of those statin drugs, which is really debatable, and I'm not recommending or not recommending anything here. But do your research on statin drugs, folks, and see what it is. But this doctor, I'm looking around the office, and I just decided I wasn't going to go to this doctor anymore. Even his Kleenex boxes had the logo of this drug on them.
Wow.
In other words, all of the stationery, most of the medical, you know, the little paper that covers the lounge in the office. I mean, everything has got that single drug from that one drug company, which means he didn't have to pay a penny to outfit his office with a lot of these essential Kleenex boxes and so on.
That huge logo in the middle of the floor.
I can only imagine the other benefits he gets at Christmas and free trips to Hawaii.
Yeah.
You know, this should be forbidden. How can the doctors find out that? Read your medical journals, doctors. Okay, go online to sources that are impartial. Do you think the drug rep is going to tell you their drugs are no good?
Right.
They're going to tell you these drugs are better than any other drug you're ever going to get. And here's a few on the side, you know, to hand out or use yourself and get high. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, this office, I've seen that. I've been on the inside to see these drug reps come around. And there's 100,000 pharma reps in the U.S. that go around and knock on doors. Of the 311 office-based physicians, it's got to be illegal. Has to be. Cut that drug out. You know, the drug advertising costs $5 billion for pharma. If they say, "Well, we have to advertise, so that raises the cost of our drugs." Well, don't advertise then.
You're
advertising to the people that don't know which drug is right for them anyway. Only doctors can make that decision.
You're exactly right. And the thing about it is, this is so common. I mean, we joke about the disclaimers on those ads. Because they tell you could get things that you didn't even know existed, you know. But the point is that as long as we look at these different practices and we go, "That's ridiculous. I can't believe this is going on."
Mm-hmm.
But it is, and it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop unless everybody just gets fed up enough. I don't know. We have a couple other things here in only about 5 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. Last but not least, though, on this topic, Paul Krugman, the economics whiz at the New York Times, his editorial from Monday, June 13th, a little while back, it just very basically says that Medicare saves money, as we already indicated in the previous story from John Conyers. So even Krugman knows, and you should read his background on that. So let's hope that's going to change for the better. Go ahead, Dennis.
We have something here that we've been talking about a little bit, and as of Wednesday, another lawsuit came up. Another challenge was filed Wednesday against Michigan's revamped law that gives state-appointed emergency managers more power.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people feel this is out of control. You know, it's in the Detroit public schools. The gentleman, what was his name, Roy Roberts?
Yes.
There's also, I think it's in Benton Harbor, Ecorse, Pontiac. And we're aware of this law that the governor has given these emergency managers basically carte blanche. They can do whatever they want. And people are fighting that. They feel that they should have the right to... they feel that this takes away citizens' rights to vote for and petition local governments.
This is Snyder and Republican legislature approved enhancements, if you will,
mm-hmm.
to give the emergency managers even more power and more right to go in whenever they feel or whenever the governor says they need to go in there and take over the place and completely negate, if needed, any contract, any democratically elected representative, like the mayor or
right.
city council, from having anything to say about it. It's pure dictatorship. Now, the previous emergency manager law that was started under the Granholm administration is not that kind of thing, although it does raise questions in my mind, too. As I've said here on this show, and remember, all the opinions expressed in this show are not necessarily those opinions of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, just... myself and Dennis today, and the people that we're reading about. But this is dictatorship. This is tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
It should not happen this way, and I wish the lawsuit well.
Me as well. And this is the second at least a second challenge against this particular thing.
But let's not forget who controls the courts. And finally, when it gets appealed, it goes to the Michigan Supreme Court. And the majority of judges there have been elected by the Republican, elected in Michigan Supreme Court by the Republican Party. They were Republican Party choices, and the Republican Party paid for their campaigns, and if they want to get reelected, they better do what the Republican Party tells them. So guess what? How they're going to decide this issue? In favor of the governor, in favor of the Republican legislature. You know it. I know it. I felt so sorry for Jocelyn Benson. She's had, since her run for Secretary of State, as a group that was trying to draw the redistricting lines in Michigan in a fair way.
Right.
Even had a little contest, invited students to how can you fairly, combine areas that have a common interest, a common need, and still have a balance in population for each representative.
This wasn't it, I promise.
This wasn't it. No, of course not. Oakland County is split up in five patch quilt areas, it looks like, on this map I'm looking at here.
It's a congressional district, right?
And a congressional district I'm looking at the outset, but the Senate district is much better. Dearborn's district, get this, the one that, Dingell and Conyers sort of split the Dearborn area right now, so we don't know who's going to run for this, but it'll be part of Washtenaw County, including all of Ann Arbor.
Right.
Ann Arbor, so way west, Superior Township, Ypsilanti, all the way downriver, Allen Park, and then Belleville and Brownstown up at the airport, and all of Dearborn and all of Dearborn Heights, and Flat Rock, where I grew up, Gibraltar City, Gros Eel. Island way over there. No river. Okay. Huron Township, Lincoln Park, Riverview, Rockwood, Southgate, Sumter, Taylor City, Trenton, Van Buren, Woodhaven, and Wyandotte will all be in the same congressional district. Now, you remember right now, though, where's Dingell's district? It's that crazy thing that goes, west part of Dearborn, all the way to Ann Arbor, and then down to Monroe.
Right.
Down to Monroe. That's crazy, too. So, but what do you expect that the since the Republican National Committee and Republican Congress came up with this plan, when it goes to our Michigan legislature, where Republicans are in the majority, and goes to the Republican governor, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to approve it.
Absolutely.
They're going to approve it. Yeah. Say, well, when the Democrats get back in power in 10 years, maybe, because you can only redistrict every 10 years. You can only gerrymander these crazy lines, split them up and divide them in these crazy ways every 10 years after there's a census. So for 10 years, we have to have this crazy quilt design that doesn't unify any interest, and elected representatives have to mix their goals and their priorities, because the needs of one community might be a farming community or not the same thing as, let's say, Ann Arbor. Crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And that's probably going to be approved. We'll ask George Duraney and for the update on that.
Okay. I think you wanted to break the news on the homecoming.
Oh, yes.
Nobody
podcast
knows.
Podcast continues. Oops, it's 2:01 for another minute. Here it is. If it gets in the podcast, two tribute bands will be Dearborn Homecoming. August 6th, it'll be Frontiers, the Journey tribute band.
I've always liked Journey.
Okay.
But I like Billy Joel, too, and they did a tribute band last year, right?
Sunday night, main stage, August 7th, Hotel California, a salute to the Eagles.
Okay.
I'm all choked up. And on Friday night, Larry Lee and the Back in the Day Band.
That's your favorite. You're really looking forward to this one, aren't you?
Well, I never heard of them, and then I found out that Larry Lee is a former Detroit Lion player.
That's right. And now he's the vice president of